So speaker, directivity of sound. That's one of the kind of important things that that you bring into this discussion that you really want to talk about when thinking about how to design a room and how to put things together, right?
That's right. So, and this kind of came about because our speakers, as home theater speakers go, tend to have higher directivity than most. And so, you know, the rules of system EQ inside rooms haven't applied the same way to our product. And so I've, through just doing several different rooms and having discussions with other engineers that do this and participating in different workshops and things, have developed some new ideas about the importance of the directivity, how it relates to the way we experience sound in rooms. And we're going to talk about how the directivity of the loudspeaker combined with the acoustic signature of the room can inform the so-called target curve that we would use to try to do equalization successfully. Yeah, there isn't, in my opinion, one slam dunk target curve that you can say, okay, you know, it's a horizontal flat line for every situation, because I think anybody who's tried that realizes that doesn't sound good at all. So we're going to talk about the directivity of both loudspeakers and natural sounds, whether it's coming off of a piece of machinery or a human voice or a musical instrument, because the physical rules that dictate the directivity of the sound apply to all things. And the consequence of that is the room interplay with those sounds is the same for both the loudspeaker and the musical instrument.
A loudspeaker, you know, doesn't have the same directivity or radiant characteristics as musical instruments, which is one reason why perhaps it's very difficult, if not impossible, to play back a sound of, say, a violin and be unable to distinguish, oh, that's a reproduction, that's coming from a speaker, versus that's coming from a real violin in the same room I'm in, right?
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, that's one of the variables we can't control, right? In the recording chain, from the musical performance through the recording process to the playback system, there are lots of variables that we can't control. And one of them is the directivity of the loudspeakers will never match the directivity of the instruments or voice, because those all have their own independent directivities too, right?
Right. And so in fact, we have a couple of things to show in that regard, if you're ready to show these graphics here.
Yeah. Why don't we look at the violin?
Right. Graphic. Sound radiation violin would be the first one to look at. And we'll be able to see here how the radiation pattern from a violin really changes at different frequencies. There it is. So tell us what we're looking at.
Yeah, so I'm going to try to avoid any kind of real technical stuff and keep it super common sense.
Oh, you don't have to do that. We're all geeks on this bus.
Well, yeah, we'll geek out then a little bit. Maybe I'll geek out a little bit more. So the concept here is the directivity of a sound of any object, whether, again, it's a violin or a loudspeaker or a person talking, is largely determined by the size of the wavelength of the sound being emitted. And so we talked last time about how once the wavelength of the sound coming to, you know, reflecting off the wall to the side of your head, once that wavelength becomes the size of your head or smaller, your head actually blocks that sound. It reflects back off. Some as a small tiny bit is absorbed, and that sound doesn't make it over to your opposing ear. So the size of the sound wave is a key fundamental factor in how sound is radiated. And so this graphic shows you that a violinist, the low frequencies, 200 to 400 hertz, and it says 550, are omnidirectional.
But the lower frequencies,
The lower frequencies are long compared to the size of the instrument. And so the instrument radiates those waves pretty much omnidirectionally. And that's true of a loudspeaker too. In the low frequencies, loudspeakers are small compared to the wavelength. And so the sound comes out, wraps around the box, and it radiates spherically, you know, omnidirectionally out of the speaker. Now, as we increase the frequency of the sound reproduced, then the physical dimensions of the loudspeaker or violin start to dictate where the sound goes. And you can see in the lower right graphic, the high frequency content coming off the violin, 2,500 to 5,000, that largely radiates perpendicularly off of the soundboard of the violin. So imagine the complexity in this situation, because where do you put the microphone, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So you know, and again, we can't control that, but if somebody did put a microphone above violin, so if you've ever heard a classical recording where the microphones were hung over the orchestra, and so it is picking up a lot of that 2,500 to 5,000, well, the listeners in the audience don't get as much as that. As much as that energy. And so the balance isn't really natural. When we hear violins in a concert hall, the sound is soft and silky. And even when it's loud, it maintains this sort of soft character. But when it's recorded with the microphone, above it, where it's getting excess high frequency energy, they can sound very strident and kind of steely and really not very natural or very pleasant at all. So, so the idea here is, as the wavelength, goes down, as the frequency goes up, the size of the sound wave starts to get smaller and smaller again. I think I used my, fingers last time, you know, the sound of 20 kilohertz is about that big.
Yeah.
The sound of 20 hertz is 50 feet long, right?
Right.
So now that those laws that dictate the directivity of the violin, fortunately for us, are the same laws that dictate the directivity of the loudspeaker. And while you're correct to point out that you're never going to have the same directivity, a speaker's not going to have the same directivity as a musical instrument, at least the way rooms deal with that information is similar.